The issue that we run into across the state is recountability.
Recountability. Our word of the day.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It is not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Yeah, I'm not scared.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
I may be a little scared.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California, up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast and 106.7 FM Queso in Cottage Grove, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI, in Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1, and in Palinville, New York on 102.9 FM. And of course, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We're also streaming coast to coast and around the globe 5 days a week on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Welcome to the Bradcast. News of Donald Trump's reported selection to head up the Environmental Protection Agency is in today. And Desi Doyen, I say reported because I don't know that this has been confirmed yet by the Trump campaign, correct?
As of airtime, it has not yet been confirmed.
You will be shocked, not you, Des, but everyone else will be shocked to learn that this nominee, if in fact it turns out to be accurate, is a climate change denier. Perfect.
Of course.
Perfect. A climate change denier heading up the, I guess we have to say, euphemistically named Environmental Protection Agency at this point.
Yeah, because he's against the first two words, the parts about environment and protection.
Right. But he'll be heading the agency, so there's that. We will talk about who that pick is. And what it means and what his history is coming up in a little bit. But speaking of euphemisms, our coverage of what we euphemistically call a recount in this country continues as the Green Party's Jill Stein continues to put up one hell of a fight, frankly, one hell of a fight. Never mind what you think about her, what you don't, whether you voted for her, whether you didn't. She's putting up one hell of a fight right now, as are her supporters, for some kind of citizen oversight of election results in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan still at this hour. It really should not be this hard. And I'll be speaking to my guest about exactly that shortly. But just to give you today's update, and there's a lot here, the counting and or rescanning of paper ballots is now in day 7 in the state of Wisconsin, where Donald Trump is reported to have defeated Hillary Clinton by about 0.5% of the vote. About 22,000 votes out of some 3 million initially tallied. So far, there is very little change reported in the results to date in the state, where the largest counties in the state are simply rerunning their hand-marked paper ballots right through the same optical scan computer systems that tallied them the first time, either correctly or incorrectly. Who knows? Without hand counting, of course, we can't know. But those tallies continue in the Badger State in the face of so far unsuccessful challenges to try and stop those counts by a number of folks on Team Trump, his super PACs and so forth. Things are much more complicated in both Pennsylvania and Michigan today. We've got some news just out of Pennsylvania, where a 100% unverified touchscreen votes are used across much of the state. We call them direct recording electronic voting systems. There is no way to know after the election if any vote, if any single vote, not one vote, no way to know if any vote ever cast on a direct recording electronic or DRE voting system has been accurately recorded by the voting system after the election. And yet that's what they use across much of the state of Pennsylvania still. The Stein campaign, therefore, has been fighting for forensic audits, among other things, but forensic audits of the voting systems in Pennsylvania, since there is so little to actually count. She's hoping to have computer scientists examine the systems and their audit logs, their internal audit logs of the tabulators and of the voting machines, to determine if, as was revealed in Venango County, Pennsylvania, back in 2011, unknown computers or users may have gained access to the systems for nefarious purposes. So we don't know. We don't know, and they are fighting this forensic challenge. She has also sued in federal court for intervention to try and get a federal court order for a statewide count and forensic analysis. But a hearing in Philadelphia Municipal Court today rejected Jill Stein's filing to obtain forensic audits of the voting systems in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas today denied a full forensic analysis of voting machines and their software as requested by the Stein campaign. The Stein campaign says that such an analysis is the only way to guarantee the accuracy of the election results in Philadelphia. Lead counsel for the Stein campaign recount effort in Pennsylvania, Elon Mazel, said the court's decision will deny voters the chance to know the truth about this election. The only way we'll know if this was a secure and accurate election is if we're able to do a full forensic analysis of these machines, which experts testify are easily hacked, have been hacked by college students in a lab setting, and are banned in California and other states. The federal courts, the attorney adds, will now have a chance to do right by the people of Pennsylvania and order such an analysis. A statement from Professor Daniel Lopresti, chair of the Department of Computer Science and Engineering at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, said, because Philadelphia's voting machines do not keep a voter verified paper record of each vote, we can't be sure that these machines have accurately tallied the votes. That is why a full forensic analysis of the machines and their software is necessary. That's a computer scientist, Professor Daniel Lopresti. But, you know, science, we don't listen to those sorts of things.
Apparently, the administrative court is completely uninterested in that.
Yeah, that's what it seems. So they're going to take that fight to state court as well as federal court already for Pennsylvania. But the big fight today is over the hand counting of paper ballots that has been underway since Monday in the state of Michigan. Now, there was a federal court hearing today. We are still awaiting a ruling from that court at this hour. I'll explain that shortly. But last night, shortly after we got off the air, there were two different court rulings, one in state court and one in federal court, concerning the Michigan fight. And the ongoing counting and Team Trump's efforts, including Michigan State Attorney General Bill Schuette, a Trump supporter, their fight, and they are fighting tooth and nail in both state and federal court to stop the attempt at transparent citizen oversight of the results. They're trying to stop that altogether for some reason in Michigan, despite the fact that there are paper ballots to count in Michigan, and despite the fact that Trump is said to have defeated Hillary Clinton in the state by just over 10,000 votes out of 5 million reportedly tabulated. That's less than 0.1%. And I believe I misspoke earlier when I said Wisconsin was like that. That was actually Michigan. That is less than 0.1%. Now, here's what happened after we got off air yesterday. According to the Detroit Free Press, a federal appeals court upheld the Michigan recount that has been underway since Monday in an opinion issued late Tuesday. This was just moments before a state appeals court issued an opinion saying the recount should never have been allowed to begin. So the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, in a 2-1 ruling, said that the U.S. District Judge Mark Goldsmith did not abuse his discretion when he ordered that the counting should begin on Monday rather than waiting until Wednesday. Now, the reason we had to wait till Wednesday originally was because last Friday, Team Trump filed an objection to the requested recount that was supposed to start on Friday. And that meant that, according to state law, you have to wait 2 business days after that objection is heard and decided on by the state board. Well, that meant that there was no counting over the weekend, and that then they had to wait Monday and Tuesday before starting counting on Wednesday. But the U.S. District Judge, Mark Goldsmith, said, no, the plaintiffs here will be irreparably harmed if the counting is not completed in time for the Electoral College vote on the 19th, and frankly, the safe harbor date on December 13th, when the federal mandate says that all of this counting and certification must be done. So that came, that federal court, that was a blow to the Michigan Republican Party, who was trying to get the federal court to rescind their order to count the ballots in Michigan. This shouldn't be that hard. Did I say that? But then, minutes after the federal court issued that opinion that the counting could continue, the Michigan Court of Appeals released a 3-0 opinion. And I should add, this is three Republican judges. They released a 3-0 opinion after a hearing, almost immediately after a hearing on Tuesday, saying that the Michigan Board of Canvassers should never have allowed the recount to proceed because Jill Stein received just more than 1% of the vote, and therefore she does not qualify as an aggrieved candidate under state law. She's not aggrieved. She couldn't possibly win. She only got 1% of the vote. She has nothing to complain about here. No reason to want to know who actually won or lost the election in Michigan. That is their ruling. Now, the federal court had said if subsequently, and remember, their ruling came before the state court, but they said if subsequently the Michigan courts determine that the recount is improper under Michigan state law for any reason, then we expect the federal district court to enter any properly filed motions to dissolve or to modify the order that they must continue the counting. And that is when the Republican Party said, all right, we're going back to federal court after we got this state court ruling. And on Tuesday night, they filed a motion once again to stop the counting immediately in the state of Michigan. That's where we were as of late last night. And it's sort of where we are today, but they were in court today, in fact, arguing against any further counting. The Michigan Republican Party, as well as the Michigan State Attorney General, in their lawsuit, essentially against the Michigan Board of Canvassers, who said, yeah, the counting can go ahead. We are now waiting for that ruling, that written ruling from the judge, from the federal district court judge, on whether this counting must be halted immediately or not. It doesn't look good, but that's just frankly my opinion. It doesn't look good that the counting will continue.
Here. Well, you mean it doesn't look good because of it being a written ruling rather than a ruling from the bench?
Well, I don't know. You've got a state court saying 3-0, this counting should have never begun in the first place. Now, the federal court may see it differently. And one thing that the federal court may do is say, because they asked about this in the hearing today, has the Michigan State Supreme Court yet rung in on this matter? And they have not.
Okay.
So this could continue to go. The federal court could say, you know, until there is a definitive ruling from the Michigan State Court. And by the way, two justices on the Michigan State Supreme Court have been named by Donald Trump as potential U.S. Supreme Court nominees. And the Stein campaign is saying, well, they have a personal interest, obviously, in Donald Trump winning this election. Those two justices should recuse themselves from a state court hearing on this matter. They have not yet recused themselves.
Okay.
Well, you sound cynical.
I am slightly cynical that they will, because, you know, there seems to be problems with judges recusing themselves. But hey, you know. that was the old America. This, you know, when people used to recuse themselves for things like conflicts of interest.
Apparently, the Stein campaign, of course, says that there are 75,000 ballots in the state of Michigan that were cast by voters which did not reportedly vote for anyone for president. That is roughly double the number of people who did not vote for president, according to the computer systems there back in 2012. So you got this much bigger number. They would like to verify that. And they also cited hacking attempts on the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, and Arizona and Illinois election officials leading up to the election. So they say there are a lot of red flags here that demand that we find out if the ballots were counted accurately. Stein's attorney wrote to the Sixth Circuit Court for the voices of Michigan's people to be heard and their votes to be counted in the 2016 presidential election. Michigan must complete a recount. Right now, approximately 0.1% of the votes need to have been misread to affect the outcome of the election, according to the Detroit Free Press. There is also no reason to have confidence that the rest of Michigan's votes were accurately tabulated, said Stein's attorney. But now the ability to actually count in Michigan at all, correctly or otherwise, even if they allow the count to move forward. We talked about this yesterday, and it continues to be mind-blowing as we continue to learn more about it. The computerized poll book Rochester Hills, listed the names of 848 voters who cast ballots at this particular precinct, but the ballot box contained just 847 ballots. It was one ballot short of what the poll books, the computerized poll books, had listed. So where is that other ballot? The poll workers had offered no explanation for what happened to the other ballot. And Oakland County's director of election says, therefore, it doesn't match on the canvas and it doesn't match now. This precinct is not recountable. One ballot off, they will not recount it. They will just use the original election night returns that came in. Under Michigan law, a precinct cannot be recounted if the poll book and the ballot box numbers don't match, unless there's some sort of valid explanation. In such cases, the Free Press says, the results from the original election night tally will stand. But it isn't just an issue in Oakland County. The same problem is appearing in precincts in a number of counties, including Wayne County, where about one-third of the precincts show discrepancies during the November canvass. According to the chair of the Wayne County Board of Canvassers, Krista Haritunian, those discrepancies could make those precincts, 610 precincts in Wayne County, including 392 in Detroit, in heavily Democratic-leaning Detroit, could make those precincts completely ineligible for recounting. This is just amazing. We are seeing this issue. This is according to Keenan Patoni, head of Recount Michigan, working on the Green Party effort in Michigan to count 5 million ballots there. We're seeing this as an issue in several instances of precincts being deemed not recountable because the numbers don't match. We think that any instance where ballots are not being counted compromises the process. This is an example of why we need to conduct a recount in the first place and verify the vote, said Margie Levinson, a spokesperson for the Stein effort. These are the kind of issues discovered during a recount that can be fixed in future elections. And she is right. If nothing else, we are learning just how terrible Michigan's law and all of the other states' laws, the other two states at least, how terrible these laws are. Mark Grebner, a longtime political consultant who has studied Michigan elections for decades, said Michigan law is stupid on this point. It makes no sense and it should be fixed. Other states do not do this. Sometimes the numbers just don't match, but poll workers will explain the discrepancy. For example, if a ballot is challenged because the voter didn't have ID or something, the ballot is placed into a challenge envelope and it's counted separately. But poll workers are supposed to note that in their end of the night report. But if they leave it out on a busy election, a presidential election day, then the number of ballots in the box will not equal the number of ballots in the poll books. That precinct becomes unrecountable.
Because of a clerical error.
Right. And so we have to go with whatever the original numbers were, right or wrong, or anything else. The chair of the Wayne County Board of Canvassers confirmed numbers that were initially reported by Detroit News yesterday. We discussed on this show, showing 610 precincts out of 1,680 in Wayne County that could not be reconciled in the canvas report in November. So we're talking before we've even gotten to a so-called recount stage. The canvas boards went back, they saw these mismatches, and they certified the results anyway.
So it's not just terrible election laws in Michigan, but a terrible election administration system in Michigan.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they followed. Maybe that's the law. Maybe that's what they followed. But we already knew these were wrong. But to have so many precincts,
yeah. over half the precincts, have problems. That's a problem with election administration, whether it's poll worker training, mm-hmm. whether it's machine failure, whatever it is, they have big problems.
Sometimes someone can have a spoiled ballot, but then they don't re-vote. So they get frustrated and they leave. That would not be a matchup. Some people walk into the polling place, they sign in, but they just don't cast a ballot at all for any reason. Those would not be recountable. You just go with the original numbers in those cases. The and it's not just those two counties. All right, Wayne County had more than 802,000 ballots to recount, despite hundreds of precincts that apparently will not be counted at all or will not be recounted, but that also means they would not be counted because human beings never verified any of those results. It was all done by computers. That happened in Detroit. This was a Representative Stephanie Chang from Detroit said, "I am appalled that so many precincts will be disqualified from a recount. With the discrepancies and machine malfunctions that took place, there is even further justification to make examination of these precincts a priority during the recounts. I am extremely concerned that thousands of Detroit voters' voices will not be heard during the recount process." One of the things we reported yesterday is that one of the reasons for the mismatch, these mismatches in these polls, is scanners, optical scanners that had problems on election day where the same ballot, got jammed and they re-ran it through the ballot and the counter may have gone up twice even if it only recorded the vote once. We don't know. We won't know unless we examine those ballots. And that may never happen. Hundreds of precincts in Wayne County, also in Oakland County. By midday, 198 of the county's 520 precincts had been recounted. Things were moving along nicely there. But Roselle, the elections director there, said that Oakland had found 17 precincts that could not be recounted, including 7 in Pontiac, which is 1/3 of the city's totals. They would not be counted. Counting continued in Macomb County. But again, we had similar problems there. As of 4 p.m. yesterday, Tuesday, 7 precincts could not be counted, 6 in Warren and 1 in Sterling Heights. That totaled 4,737 votes. Remember, we've got a 10,000 vote margin. So just, you know, in those 7 precincts alone, you've got almost 5,000, almost half the margin that Trump is said to have won by. Macomb officials said they want to emphasize, however, that each of those votes had been counted in election night tallies. They just can't be recounted now. So why worry? We will talk about why to worry after a quick break here. And with all of these forces allied against citizen oversight, even where we have actual hand-marked paper ballots, what does this tell us about American democracy? in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and the rest of the country. We'll discuss that and much more with election integrity author and advocate Paul Leto next. He has some thoughts of his own on Michigan and much more next on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
I said as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh, Michigan seems like a dream to me now.
Yeah, seems like a dream to me too. May seem like a dream to Jill Stein soon if the counting is ordered stopped in the state of Michigan. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with you here. All right, I want to get to my guest here momentarily, who knows quite a bit about the mess in Michigan and, frankly, the mess when it comes to election integrity all across the country. But first, I want to play you this clip because I think it's just kind of amazing from Michigan State Elections Director Chris Thomas. This is the guy who is charged with making sure elections run smoothly, run accurately, in theory, run in a way that the citizens can know they ran smoothly and correctly and accurately. His comments about what we were just talking about in the last segment of all of these precincts that are uncountable. Frankly, I think we need a Nat King Cole song, Unrecountable, That's What You Are. Yeah, I know. That's the case here in Michigan. Let me play you his response explaining why a precinct may be unrecountable. Michigan Elections Director Chris Thomas. And Des, I'm going to stop and start once or twice here.
The issue that we run into across the state is recountability. In order for a precinct to be recountable, the seals that secure the ballot container have to be affixed. They can't be broken. And the numbers on those seals have to be recorded in the poll book election night.
Okay, so that makes sense. They have to record the numbers in the poll books of the seals that they put onto the ballot box. And those numbers, when they go to open up the ballot boxes, those seal numbers must match what was written on election night. That makes sense, so that nobody went, you know, between election night and the time they do a recount, nobody went in and changed the number of ballots in the box or did something like that. Okay, that makes sense. Keep going.
And then they have to match today. If they don't match, the precinct will not be recountable. And the second part of the recountability phase is whether the number of ballots equals the number of names that were written in the poll book on election day. And if those two are not reconciled, then the precinct cannot be recounted.
There were a lot of precincts in that situation in Wayne County. What does that mean for the recount?
So what that means is the election night returns will stand. So it doesn't mean that no votes will be counted, but that the numbers that were reported on election night and canvassed by this board in the 2 weeks after the election, those numbers will remain the numbers.
So we can't recount those if the ballots, the number of ballots in the box does not match what was essentially printed out by the computers on election night. We won't even, if there's a mismatch there, we won't go try to figure out what happened. Those precincts are just unrecountable, according to the Michigan Elections Director, Chris Thomas.
And there just will not be a recount of that precinct.
Should voters be concerned about the fact that there were these non-reconciled numbers?
Well, it's a concern that we always have when it occurs. But I don't think they should be concerned about their votes counting. That's already been canvassed and reported.
So no reason to worry. That's already, we already have the numbers. So the fact that you can't have any kind of recount by human beings, the fact that the computers have counted them, but the public has not, you don't need to worry your pretty little head because we'll just use the original numbers and everything is fine. That is the state election director. in the state of Michigan. Chris Thomas, it just blows me away. Here to comment on that and this entire fine mess in Michigan and all across the country, former election law attorney, longtime election integrity advocate and author, and originally from Michigan, now based in North Dakota, Paul Leto joins us on the broadcast. Paul, it has been a long time, I think, since you were a guest on the show. You've been fighting this battle as long as I have. So welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Well, thank you very much.
Good to have you here, because I suspect your head may be exploding as much as mine is on this issue. You posted a comment last night at bradblog.com in response to our coverage of this Michigan mess yesterday on the broadcast, and you made several good points that I think need to be underscored here in regard to this ridiculous state law in Michigan that effectively disqualifies potentially hundreds of precincts from being hand counted at all as part of the recount, in cases where you had these mismatches of even just one ballot from what was written down in the precinct poll book on election day. First, it seems as if the law was meant to avoid stuff like ballot box stuffing, stuff that makes sense after the close of polls. So in one sense, that law makes sense that you can't recount the ballots if the number of ballots don't reconcile with the number of voters who actually signed in to vote at the polls, right? That part makes sense, does it not?
Right, it's the part where they say the original count will stand. That's the problem, because these are problem precincts. They cry out for investigation. So when you say, oh, we're going to let the original count stand, that's the problem. Usually if there's fraud, you're going to, you know, investigate, maybe void out that precinct for fraud or something like that. But no, they just want to go with the original count.
And that seems, as you noted in your comment, that seems to be essentially an invitation to fraud. How so?
Well, it's a safe harbor for error or for fraud, because whatever happened there is not reviewable. It's not going to change. They're going to stick with it. So if you know that, all you need to do is add an extra ballot without, you know, adjusting the poll books, which, you know, makes it easier to do fraud. Or easier to create an error, mm-hmm. and then that error or fraud is insulated from ever affecting the result. So it's like, if somebody did want to do fraud, it's like a dream for them.
We talked about in the previous segment that even just one ballot, if it's one ballot off, and in many cases, you know, you have voters who show up to vote, then they have problems voting, or they change their mind, or they spoil the ballot and they, you know, they walk away. We call it the fleeing voter who never actually finishes their ballot, or, you know, cases where they may have spoiled the ballot, ask for a new one, and the poll worker forgot to write that down in the book. It seems pretty easy now that we all know to simply assure that hundreds of precincts, as we're seeing in Detroit, are, as Chris Thomas says, unrecountable.
Right. There's 392 in Detroit out of 610 statewide. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, as some have suggested, that it's Democratic fraud. It would actually be very elegant, you know, if it was a Republican fraud, because, you know, the initial suspicions would be that it would be Democratic fraud. But you could, if you could get in there, reduce votes in Detroit by 10%, and then have the Democrats be blamed for it, that would be wonderful from a hacking standpoint. But here's the thing, is that it doesn't really matter in from the perspective of democracy whether it's an error or whether it's a fraud, because we're only interested in the true vote count, and error or fraud, it changes the results by the same number of votes. The only thing fraud is really relevant to would be criminal sanctions if any cases were filed, and political fallout. But as far as democracy, it doesn't matter whether it's error or fraud. But in this case, the Michigan law itself is protecting and creating a safe harbor for both errors and fraud.
Many of the computer scientists who are experts, frankly, at hacking voting systems, like the University of Michigan's computer science professor Alex Halderman, has said that post-election hand counts should be carried out if only as a deterrent for criminals. It seems like the kind of message that we're sending here is feel free to defraud the system. In Michigan, with this particular law that makes these precincts unrecountable. But also, you know, all of the pushback that we are seeing in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, everywhere that I know you've seen over the years, Paul, as you have sought, you know, various hand counts, recounts, post-election audits, et cetera. I mean, isn't the message we're sending here that you will probably feel free to defraud the system? You will probably never get caught because the forces against any kind of citizen oversight of election results seems to be nearly insurmountable now on so many levels.
Right. I mean, talk about blizzards. There's a blizzard of litigation hitting Jill Stein in multiple states. Everybody from the establishment to the Republicans and political action committees trying to stop her. There are at least a half a dozen different courts. And I always say, you know, don't count on anything happening after election night that's really going to be favorable. Why? There's two big reasons. Number one, everybody wants to avoid embarrassment. Nobody wants to be the next Florida. Mm-hmm. So everybody in the state government and the Elections Bureau is working really, really hard not to be embarrassed. And that's a nonpartisan, you know, interest mm-hmm. that really goes against, you know, transparency and getting the truth out.
It's also a non-nefarious necessarily. In other words, they're not trying to, they may not be trying to hide fraud. They may just be trying to keep themselves from, for example, what we're seeing now in Michigan.
Right. I mean, if you even think you might have, you know, be getting caught with your pants down, you're going to pull your pants up. It's just an instinct that everybody has to, you know, circle the wagons and try to protect themselves, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they have a guilty conscience. The other thing is that 100% of all election law is made by election winners who absolutely do not want their victories to be questioned. So that's another factor, is that you can never really count on getting good election laws for post-election remedies, because everybody that's voting on it is a winner, and they do not want losers, or what they would call sore losers, mm-hmm. questioning, you know, their great victory.
Yeah, but that's a very good point. I do recall, and we've got audio somewhere on bradblog.com of Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter back a few years ago being asked about this. Did he have concerns about the voting machines in Pennsylvania, where they have, you know, 100% unverifiable votes? And he literally said, well, no, you know, I think these machines were good enough to get me elected, so they're probably fine. So, you know, and that's true for election officials as well. You know, I've seen a lot of people running to become an election officials concerned about the machines. But once they are in charge, they don't want to be embarrassed by, you know, having to admit, yeah, we have problems with our voting system.
Right. And also, here's another thing. You know, you only got winners in elections. You got losers. The winners aren't going to look a gift horse in the mouth, and the losers, you know, don't want to pay the price of being pilloried as a sore loser. So basically, that leaves democracy defenseless. There's nobody who has the standing, you know, to get up there and say, hey, let's have a true count without being made fun of and having to litigate in six states or three states and six courts mm-hmm. without having to pay millions of dollars. And right now in the Michigan legislature, they're trying to pass a bill to retroactively make Jill Stein pay 100% of the cost, which would add another million-plus dollars to her tab.
It's incredible. People don't understand, and they always, you know, I've heard for so many years, well, we've got paper ballots. We can always go back later if there is any questions about the results. That's not true.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not true in practice. It's only true in theory, and if people are reassuring themselves that, hey, I got a paper ballot, that's really an illusion. You know, there's been kind of an evolution here, you know, through the last 15 years or so. Number one, first we said we want paper. Mm-hmm. And then we realized, oh, well, they'll just give us a receipt and they won't actually count the paper. So then we said we want a paper ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we realized that's not enough either. We want a paper ballot with an audit. Well, a recount is a type of an audit. And, you know, they do the audits late. It's basically certify first, ask questions later. The audits lead nowhere, and they always just paper over any problems. Mm-hmm. So even audits are not sufficient. So basically what we're left with is that if you really focus on how incredibly difficult post-election relief is, no matter who you are, the only option is to get it right on election night. And what does that mean? You got to have paper ballots, and you got to hand count them in the precincts. And if you don't have enough people to do that, what do? You modify the jury summonsing system, and you get random people in there to count. And they'd be much happier to do that than be on a 10-day jury trial, let me tell you.
Well, that's true. Get it right on election night. Where have I heard that before? At this hour, Paul Leto, we don't know if a federal court is going to call off the Michigan count altogether. It's seeming more and more likely with the three Republican judge state appellate court ruling on Tuesday that the count should never have begun in the first place because Jill Stein, they say, cannot be deemed an aggrieved party since she only received 1% of the vote and therefore she couldn't win and therefore she can't possibly be irreparably harmed if the ballots remain uncounted by human beings forever. What do you make of the state court's argument there? And really, shouldn't anybody, candidate, voter, or otherwise, be able to seek a recount, particularly if they're willing to pay for it themselves?
Well, yeah, I mean, especially if they're willing to pay for it. Although, who has the millions of dollars? Mm-hmm. But you know, 1% differences, 2% differences, even where they don't change the result, are still very relevant. It's relevant to the perceived competitiveness of future candidates. It's relevant in Stein's case if she gets above 5% for federal funding for future campaign finance, issues and stuff like that. So, and also there's a compelling interest that we the people have in a true and accurate vote count. If you think about it, when we're voting, that is the one time when the government is really supposed to listen to us, we the people, and take care to count our ballots. If they're not willing to be serious about that, when are they really going to listen to the people? When are they going to, really be serious about who they're supposed to be serving? So this whole attitude that, everybody coming out of the woodwork and opposing this just really is a very, very bad attitude for government officials to have, in a so-called democracy. They're supposed to be government servants, but they don't act like it.
They don't. Paul, before I let you go here, as a long time, you've already mentioned the solution is getting it right on election night, publicly hand counting those ballots at the precinct on election with all the parties watching, video cameras rolling, so that we can know that it's right on election night. But as a long time, very long time election integrity advocate, you've been at this as long as I have, Paul. What goes through your head when you see all of these messes that you have tried to warn about for so long coming to pass in really all three states and, frankly, with this presidential election as a whole that many of us are going to walk away from not knowing who actually won or lost. And, by the way, leading into it, Donald Trump yelling and screaming that the election was rigged and, confidence in the system plummeting, rightly or wrongly, on both the Republican and Democratic and Green and independent sides. What goes through your head when you see you've been Cassandra for a long time and now you see all of this stuff actually coming to pass today?
Well, I'm sorry to be right. I really am. Sorry to have been right to be saying for years that you can't count on these post-election remedies. But at the same time, there's nothing like banging your head against the wall, to create a teachable moment. And that's what we have here is a teachable moment that you really cannot, take solace in your paper ballot that you filled out, the night before the election or on election day and then have it run through a scanner and think that that's going to be your insurance policy if something is close and doesn't come out the right way. It's not going to be and probably never will be because, again, winners make 100% of all election law.
Yep. It's not enough just to cast your vote and walk away. You have to stay involved. You have to try to oversee your elections, and you have to fight to have reasonable election laws in place before your candidate loses. Former election law attorney, longtime election integrity advocate and author Paul Leto. Paul, really appreciate your insight here, your comments at bradblog.com. Hope you'll stay in touch as we move through this mess and the future ones that you have been so long right about.
Well, thank you very much, Brad.
Thank you, Paul Leto. All right, a quick break, and we're back with more Bradcast. Right after this, we go from bad to worse with the Environmental Protection Agency. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Yes, Donald Trump has reportedly decided on who will be the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. And as we noted earlier, you'll be stunned to hear that this man is a climate change denier. This is Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt is the man's name. Desi Doyen, I know you've got to be delighted about this.
Oy boy, this is bad.
The New York, this guy is a denier. He has worked with all of these other Republican attorneys general to file suits challenging Barack Obama's so-called Clean Power Plan, which had aimed to decrease power plant carbon emissions 30% nationwide by 2030. And now he'll be charged, if this is true, if he actually is appointed and accepted by the U.S. Senate, I believe, has to accept this nomination. He'll be in charge of administrating the Clean Power Plan, which he had fought against in court.
Yes, that he has ganged up with all of these state attorneys general to mm-hmm. kill the Clean Power Plan. And by the way, of course, the Clean Power Plan is that landmark historic emissions standards, the first ever for power plants, that was supposed to be a crucial component of the U.S. international commitment to cut our emissions as part of our agreement with the Paris Agreement.
But now the EPA director, if he gets the job here, is a man who said that the debate surrounding climate change is, quote, far from settled.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the stuff that George Bush was saying more than a decade ago. It's still not settled. Scientists continue to disagree about the degree and extent of global warming and its connections to the actions of mankind. This statement that he put out with Alabama Attorney General Luther Strange back in May, that debate, he says, should be encouraged in classrooms, public forums, and the halls of Congress. How about in the halls of, you know, science labs where the scientists have all determined exactly how this works, exactly what man's role is in climate change? Which Scott Pruitt, says is far from settled. Not now, he has a reason to believe this, to at least to pretend to believe that the science is far from settled. He is a tool of the fossil fuel company and companies, and I mean literally in this case. The New York Times reported back in December of 2014 this letter that was sent to the EPA by Attorney General Scott Pruitt of Oklahoma, and it carried, as the New York Times reported at the time, a blunt accusation. Federal regulators were grossly overestimating the amount of air pollution that was caused by energy companies drilling new natural gas wells in the state of Oklahoma. He said that was ridiculous, that regulators were just saying there was way too much air pollution, way more than actually existed. But as the New York Times points out, Mr. Pruitt left out one critical point. The three-page letter that he sent was written by lawyers for Devon Energy. one of Oklahoma's biggest oil and gas companies and was delivered to him by Devon's chief lobbyist. William F. Whitsitt is the guy's name, and he wrote to Pruitt to say, quote, outstanding. The Attorney General's staff
good cut-and-paste job.
They had literally, as the Times report, the Attorney General's staff had taken Devon's draft, or Devon's, I don't even know how it's pronounced, Devon's draft, copied it onto state government stationery with only a few words changed, and sent it to Washington with the Attorney General's signature on it. Quote, said the lobbyist to Mr. Pruitt, the timing of the letter is great, given our meeting this Friday with both EPA and the White House. Lobbyist Whitsitt then added, please pass along Devon's thanks to Attorney General Pruitt.
Coordinating with the fossil fuel industry to undermine regulations on clean air and clean water that protect the health of the population. I mean, we reported many times on the Green News Report how expensive fossil fuel, air pollution, and water pollution is to the healthcare of the public. We spend billions of dollars, not just in the United States, but around the world, fighting air pollution, chronic respiratory diseases. It's really expensive, fossil fuel pollution is.
And not just expensive, dangerous. I know you've got a statement from Congressman Ted Lieu, but before I let you get to that, Bernie Sanders put out a statement this afternoon saying Trump's nominee to lead the EPA, Scott Pruitt, is a climate denier who's worked closely with the fossil fuel industry. That's sad and dangerous. And I guess by working closely, he means taking their emails, copying it, pasting it, sending it to the EPA and the White House and pretending that's what he actually believes. Congressman Lieu.
Yes, Congressman Ted Lieu. Yeah. He's a congressman, Democrat from Los Angeles County. His statement regarding the nomination, he says, quote, Donald Trump, who lost the popular vote, has nominated anti-environmentalist Scott Pruitt to lead the EPA. As Oklahoma Attorney General, Mr. Pruitt acted as a de facto lobbyist for the oil and gas industry by challenging President Obama's EPA rules to reduce planet warming carbon dioxide emissions at our nation's power plants. That's the Clean Power Plan. Mm-hmm. In essence, Mr. Pruitt has never met a federal environmental protection that he likes. It is deeply disturbing that Mr. Pruitt, who spent so much time trying to undermine the EPA, is now being asked to run it. Equally disturbing is the fact that Mr. Pruitt does not believe in climate change. As a veteran and a colonel in the Air Force Reserves, writes Ted Lieu, I wholeheartedly agree with the U.S. military's position that climate change is real and a threat to our national security. What does Mr. Pruitt know that the Pentagon doesn't? The answer is nothing.
Well, the answer is he knows the email address of the top lobbyist for all of the energy companies that he's supposed to be regulating, frankly, in the state of Oklahoma as the attorney general, making sure that they're following the law instead of passing on their best wishes and their BS to federal authorities. Now, he will be the federal authority. That is, if this turns out to be accurate, by the way.
Right. We still have to keep that in. It has not yet been confirmed. But one of the things that the Trump team advisors have floated is the idea of redoing the EPA's endangerment finding. Now, that was a part in the 2000s during the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. The EPA was required to have to do scientific research into whether or not climate change is endangering public health. The EPA did. And famously, they sent an email to the Bush administration White House with this endangerment finding. The Bush administration White House refused to open the email. Therefore, they didn't have any receipt of it, and they didn't have to do any regulations.
They didn't have to act on it. Yes.
This is where we're going back to. So if they redo the endangerment finding, that could withdraw the Supreme Court ruling that said, oh, if the EPA finds an endangerment to public health, then they must regulate emissions. If they remove the endangerment finding, I'm not sure, but I think that that means that that Supreme Court ruling would no longer
be
effective.
The Supreme Court ruling had determined that the EPA must take action.
If they find out.
If they find out the danger. That danger was discovered, and under the Clean Power, the Clean Air Act signed by George Bush Sr., I think, 20 or 30 years ago, they must take action. That's why the George W. Bush administration did not want to open that email.
That's right.
And you're saying that there's now talk that the EPA could go back and redo that original finding?
There is talk about that as far as how far it can go. I don't know. I don't have any. There's no new information on that. And it, to me, it just says this is what the media has completely missed. Remember all the, ooh, look, Trump says he's softening on climate change. And, oh, look, he's talking to Al Gore. Maybe it's going to be okay on climate change that he's softening in some way. And no, it was all a distraction and a complete fake. And they fell for it again.
Well, we'll see if this A comes to pass, because right now the sources that I've seen, they're unnamed sources close to Pruitt, not even close to Trump.
Right.
So we'll see if this stands. And if it does, we'll see if he can get approval in the U.S. Senate. I know that, well, you could hear Bernie Sanders in that one tweet alone talks about how sad and dangerous this is. And so hopefully the Democrats find a spine and they stand up to these people. How can you have a climate change denier
and an anti-environmentalist
heading up the Environmental Protection Agency? We are far, way deep beyond the rabbit hole at this point, through the looking glass and out the other end. But that's where we get, because Hillary Clinton won by 2.7 more votes than Donald Trump.
Sam Stein at Huffington Post, real quick, he tweeted that. He said, hey, listen, when you lose by 2.7 million votes, you get to dismantle environmental regulations and take apart the healthcare system. It's in the Constitution.
Do we still have a constitution? Just curious. We'll have to check that on tomorrow's thrilling broadcast. Until then, my thanks to Desi Doyen, our producer, to my guest today, Paul Leto, longtime election integrity advocate and champion, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is greatly appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, you can download it for free at bradblog.com. or your favorite podcast site like iTunes, where we hope you'll put in a good word for us, make it a little bit easier to for everyone else to find the broadcast. Please share it far and wide. You can do that in any number of ways. Amongst them, you can find us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at The Brad Blog. And if you like, you can drop me email. My email address is bradcast@bradblog.com. All right, that's it. Until we meet again with more fantastic news, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.